I'm Alan Thorpe.
And I'm David Rogers, and together we host the Weather Pod.
In this special series on artificial intelligence, we invite leading experts to reveal how AI is being used across all sectors of the global weather enterprise.
We want to find out how business, the public sector, and academia are using AI. Can it help improve the accuracy and quality of weather and climate information?
Can it help to make weather and climate information more useful and usable across a range of critical activities that are impacted by weather and climate?
There are many claims being made about AI, but what is its real value when it comes to helping business and society meet the growing climate challenge?
Our guest this episode is Florian Papperberger, the Deputy Director General and the Director of Forecasts at the European Centre for Medium Range Weather Forecasts, ECMWF. Florian leads ECMWF's forecast department, and that's responsible for the production of weather forecasts, for forecast quality control, and for the development of novel forecast products. ECMWF has for a while been experimenting with using deep learning to produce a data-based AI weather prediction model. And last October, Florian played a key role in the launch of the Artificial Intelligence Integrated Forecasting System. This is ECMWF's first system, forecasting system, that incorporates a machine learning prediction module. In this episode, we delve more deeply into ECMWF's use of AI and how this may impact its future predictions, products and services, especially when it comes to their use by meteorological services and other customers in the developing countries. Florian, it's a great pleasure to welcome you to the Weather Pod to share some of your thoughts on how artificial intelligence is playing out in the weather prediction area.
Yeah, great to have you on the show, Florian.
Thank you very much to be here on this really rainy day.
Absolutely. I wanted to start actually, in a sense, before we delve into the machine learning aspects, by just talking a little bit about ECMWF's plans. Obviously, they're quite extensive, so you'll want to summarise them. But I think listeners will know that ECMWF is a major producing centre for weather ensemble, global weather prediction data. And it's used by, you know, many, many national meteorological services and companies and other users around the world so that they can construct weather forecasts. As I said, prior to us getting into the machine learning aspects, there are many other things that where I know there are developments, like, for example, in model resolution or the complexity of the model that you have in your forward plan. So I'm sure users will be interested to know, in broad terms, what those plans are.
Yeah, it's actually a very great question. I sort of don't really know where to start and to stop, I have to admit, because it's a fairly wide field. It's a sort of a very simple answer. It's actually that resolution and complexity will keep increasing. That's how basic and simple it is. You may know now that we actually run an ensemble at 9 kilometers, and we don't anymore have this traditional high-resolution forecast. Having said that, actually, within the Destination Earth program, we already run a 4-kilometer single run, not an ensemble, every day with an initiative. And we're experimenting with a small ensemble around the 4 kilometers. So we're already trying to push the boundary significantly beyond those 9 kilometers. And we're doing the first evaluations at this scale. And as you sort of would expect, tropical cyclones and orographic precipitation or anything to do with orography, of course, sort of really, really improves. What else is going on? Well, we improved the dynamics, we improved the physical hybridization, we work on this kilometer scale resolution and simulations of trying to push it. We do lots of other sort of more traditional things like optimizing the moist processes, evaluating non-hydrostatic effects, looking at model uncertainties, looking at the hydrology. And we also see how we can do a better trade-off between ensemble configurations. In sense of what's upcoming this year, we will have, for example, new reforecast configurations. We're going to change the reforecast configuration, which we have now. It will run every other day, so it will be twice. It currently runs twice a week. It will be running on every odd day in the future with a bit more ensemble members, and now this has an impact on a lot of people design products from that. We are starting a new season of forecast, so System 6, C6 is starting, which will have a larger ensemble size and a higher forecast frequency too. It also will extend up to 2 years. So we have a and we will have a longer reforecast period. In the Copernicus area, we are currently adding the Bureau of Meteorology to this multi-model, so people can use more multi-models. And there's also we discussed this week the new reanalysis that's called ERA 6. It will also come at a higher resolution, but it's also for the first time a one-way coupled ocean atmosphere land reanalysis.
So I suppose, Florian, what about areas where, in a sense, we're expanding out from just purely the weather in terms of the model, in terms of things like atmospheric composition, or I think you mentioned hydrology. What are the sort of additional sort of processes, if you like, or interactions that you foresee in the next few years?
So we will have more chemistry or more atmospheric composition in the normal weather forecast. Of course, we do already run the atmospheric monitoring system for the Copernicus services. That also will always that sort of goes in step in terms of resolution and reanalysis. We will have more of that. We're going to run a actually we're gonna we're looking at the CO2 and how to measure CO2 and how to do attribution from CO2 in that sense. In the hydrology, there's many sort of very specific steps. Hydrology will be completely integrated, and we will have, for example, rivers in our model. I know this sounds fairly old-fashioned, but we will have rivers in our model. Actually, we'll predict river discharge directly from the atmospheric forecasts. So all of those components are sort of are increasing too in complexity, but also increasing in terms of applications in that sense. The last one, which I think is still quite important, sort of going a bit outside the remit is, but the open data journey is of course continuing. By 2026, we will have fully open data, which will be, I think, really important for many users who can't currently afford to purchase ESMWF products.
Just to be clear, when you say open data, do you mean freely available?
There will be a significant set of data open and free, and all data will be open, and then there will be for some data. Which we can't, due to technical reasons, make open and free. There will be a charge which recovers our costs.
And it's actual data, digital. I mean, there's a lot of imagery, right,
Yeah.
you make
So
available, but.
the images or the plots are already open and free, but it will be the raw data.
That's a big step for many, I think. So maybe we can go on and talk about our favorite topic of the day. So ECMWF, at ECMWF, you've been experimenting with using deep learning to produce data-based AI weather predictions, prediction model. And I think last October you launched the Artificial Intelligence Integrated Forecasting System, AIFS for short, which is your first forecasting system incorporating a machine learning prediction module. So what prompted this, and how does it work?
So I have to admit, what you described is absolutely correct. I'm always slightly offended because we did actually already start a machine learning strategy in 2021. So it's not something which came completely out of the blue, to be fair. It was looking slightly differently, admittedly. But we did actually did do it for quite a while. And if you sort of go back to 2022, you suddenly have all these other publications popping up of trying to use machine learning in forecasting. And that sort of prompted us to re-look at machine learning and how it is done. And then I think we sort of very swiftly assembled experts around the topic and developed this AIFS forecasting system, which is very much based or very similar to the GraphCast Google one, but not the same in that sense. So that's sort of the technology is sort of very similar to each other. We have at the same time, one of our big worries, and one of my big worries at the time was that you had all these papers claiming these successes of machine learning and how great they are, and they predicted that particular tropic cyclone, that precipitation, they were really good there. And I always disliked that. And the reason is because I think it doesn't really stand up to operational scrutiny. I really believe that papers and publications, scientific evaluations are keystone, are very important. But if you really want to test a system, you have to test in reality. And therefore, we actually started to run not just our own, we also run four other systems now, which are all open source in a real operational mode, and publish the results of different groups and teams around the world on our websites for comparison. And it's super interesting because the daylight, the operational reality is sort of really sanitizing the good and the bad and what it really works from, in that sense. So I quite like it. Our model is also currently based, or is slightly based on the reanalysis, but not just. It's also based on the operational analysis. The reanalysis is sort of roughly at 0.25 degree. The analysis is at significant higher resolution. We're sort of making 6-hour time steps and go out to 10 days. We've done experiments going out to sub-seasonals of 45 days already. And these models are not too dissimilar, I would argue, to ChatGPT, that instead of learning connections between words, they're learning the connections between the atmosphere in that sense. So that sort of prompted us. And if you look very carefully on our websites, we also publish scores now for all of those. It's only a limited number currently on the website because it takes us a while to get it up. And there you can actually see the traditional ranking between the traditional models, but also with the machine learning models.
So what's been the, what have, I mean, if you can summarize that quickly, I mean, what have you seen so far in terms of performance? I mean, how is it helping or otherwise?
In terms of performance, they're scarily good. We just have actually started working on our new versions of the AIFS model. Sort of, to be fair, the version release is significantly higher than traditional weather forecast. It's still a very fast-moving discipline, so we tend to release, or we have a new version nearly every month at the moment, or every other month, to be fair, ready. The latest version I've seen improved precipitation so much it's basically double the rate what we've seen. So we had 2 days improvement in precipitation. Scores and really seep scores of proper station-based verification. And we all know that 2 days in traditional modeling did take us good 20 years usually, and we've achieved that in less than 4 months in that sense. So the scores are quite good. The other thing we are quite keen on is sort of more in-depth diagnostics. So that's very traditional evaluation. And we just looked at that, and we have these quarterly review meetings, and we made one very specific on the artificial intelligence models. And they are scarily good in predicting physical features which they haven't been really primarily trained on. So you look at error structures between our traditional IFS and you look at the AIFS, and they're not too dissimilar. They both have errors, for example, have precipitation errors around the tropics, which are fairly obvious, and they both display them. But if I were to give you these both different ones, I don't think, or give you the two pictures, I don't think you would be able to distinguish, unless you know what the IFS error structures is, which one is really which. So they predict things which I didn't expect them to predict.
Florian, just for listeners who are not so familiar with how this all operates, can you say how this machine learning model, if you call it that, what is it based on? What's the, without obviously going into mathematical detail, but what's the kind of overall approach that's taken?
So the overall approach is that we take ER5 data as a starting point. We sort of construct a graph, or traditionally more a grid. Our graph is sort of based on our current modeling, so reduced Gaussian grid, and then we just train, or we just optimize weights between the inputs and outputs. We do this first at ER5, and then we use those weights or those training things. And I think it was very well explained by Amy in your last podcast, to be really fair. We use, instead of ER5, so we've trained those weights, and then we use the real-time high-resolution reanalysis and train again. And because we have a better starting position, it allows us to train faster for the high resolution in that sense. And with that, we're sort of getting closer and closer, in a sort of traditional optimization way. I think if anybody ever has done model optimization or calibration, it's really exactly the same process.
So, the one phrase you haven't used, but I'm sure it's embedded in what you've said, which is neural networks.
No, I haven't used the word neural networks because I think it's sometimes a bit misleading as a category to be used, to be fair. And I don't think it matters so much, to be honest. You're optimizing a model, whether it's a neural network or a graph or whatever else it is, it doesn't really matter. You optimize weights, and you're trying to get better in that as a simple structure. What matters, what data you feed in and what data you train on, that's the real key in these operations.
So that's a good segue into what I wanted to pick up next, which was about this training data set, which as you've mentioned, that is a crucial part. We need to know about, in a sense, the past weather data to allow the machine learning, the deep learning to learn something about the way the atmosphere and the weather systems work. I guess again, for those who are not quite so familiar, you've used the term reanalysis several times already. What exactly is reanalysis? How is that? What is that in terms of the training data set? What is it exactly?
So a reanalysis is basically a representation of the Earth or of the Earth system itself, trying to feed in all the observations we have and trying to make as seamless maps in time and space as possible. So a map without a gap. So assume now we have observations, which may be very sparse in some regions. We're trying to build in, we're feeding a physical-based model in between, and with that, we're sort of trying to predict the entire state of the atmosphere. For every hour from the 1940s until today. So it's a very continuous time set in that sense. So that's sort of the input into the current versions of machine learning models.
Okay, and you mentioned there, and I just wanted to make sure we fully expose that. That, of course, the observations are relatively sparse, particularly as you go further back in time, and so you need what is essentially the traditional physics-based IFS to, very crudely put, to fill in the gaps between the those sparse observations. Is that a fair